Hi, this is Charlie Peck with Thriving Educator Podcast. We have Dr. Brandi Kelly, and oh my gosh, Kelly, I am so glad you're here. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Charlie.
Yes, well, this is a powerful episode. So we're going to actually focus on giving hope for people experiencing trauma, anxiety, and depression in our school systems. And you know a lot about that because you have an incredible background experience to bring into your role as a superintendent. So can you please share what that is?
Sure. When I was 15, I was a sophomore in high school, and it was a rainy Saturday. I was getting ready for prom, and my mom had given me permission to go to prom with a group of friends, even though I was a sophomore, but I had to clean the house first. I had those responsibilities, and I wasn't excited about it. But before I headed off to prom that day, my little brother Dustin ran into the kitchen, frantic, and he shared with us that Brandon, our middle brother, had fallen in the creek, was his words. So at that point in time, I was just irritated because my little brother just got mud all over the kitchen floor, and I had to clean that up now. But fast forward, it was like a scene out of a movie. There were news vans when I got there in my prom attire. And my prom date, there were news vans. The whole community lined the creek and they were looking for my brother. We looked for Bub for the 3 days, essentially. It was Saturday, Sunday, which was Mother's Day, and we found him on Monday. The divers pulled his body out of the creek, put him in a body bag, and that changed our family's life. For years, it was just something I coped with. Didn't think about it as trauma until I was probably in my 40s and I had that light bulb moment that I had certainly experienced trauma in my life. My brother Dustin, who was with Brandon when he fell in the creek, he saw him go in. I knew he had experienced trauma, but I really didn't think of myself that way. And I had that aha moment, and it just prompted me to start doing this work, Lead with Hope, because you have a choice when you experience trauma. And by the way, one in three of our students in classrooms today have experienced trauma. And for some reason, I made the choice to establish healthy habits, to have an optimistic outlook, to persevere and develop my purpose and lead with passion, and also always strive for excellence. My brother Dustin, he took a different route and he's had a lot of difficulties along the way. Our kids are facing those same choices. And there's no wonder that the anxiety and the depression in our world, in the United States, is the highest of any nation. We have about 32% reporting anxiety and depression symptoms in 2023.
Right. And that is such a high number. And so I think it's important. It's so important, Brandi, that we teach people how to recognize that they are responding in tra to trauma. So I'm wondering if you're able to kind of dive in a little bit about that time you did realize that, like how it showed up for you, because often these things show up as a body response or something shifts and they don't understand what's going on. So can you explain how that felt for you?
I'm a very type A person. And so when Brandon drowned, I don't think I dealt with it as a teenager. And so fast forward when I was in college and the stressors started hitting me, right? At that time, I started having those symptoms. Of, I thought at the time it was depressive symptoms, but now I look back on it and I think it was more anxiety. It was anxiety. It was a fear of failure. It was concerns that things were not going to work out the way that I wanted them to. And whenever that happens for me, I grab on tighter. I really hold on tight. I try to control more. And I think that's a normal response for many of us. And so at that point, I did go and I was prescribed some antidepressants. But unfortunately, a lot of people fall short. They do the medication because it's a quick fix. And sometimes it's needed, don't get me wrong. But in addition to that, therapy or changing your habits or, you know, developing skills and coping mechanisms that help you overcome those things is so incredibly important, because otherwise you just continually repeat that loop that is maladaptive. And so the things that I think I did, it showed up in my body because I was holding on, I was stressed, I was not taking care of myself, I was just pushing harder. And it wasn't until I really looked at what was going on in my life and I decided, okay, I've got to implement, I'm still not good with exercise. I know that's something I need to do, but I still fall short there. But what I have done better is my mindset. Mindset is so huge. And I have developed habits that help me to be present, mindful, grateful. Practicing gratitude is such a powerful skill, something very simple that you can do every single day. I have a gratitude journal and I write in it. And, you know, today, one of the things that I did early on was I sent a text to three people in my life that they mean the world to me and I love them more than words can express. And I just told them that. How simple of a thing to do that changes my mindset, that helps me to focus on what I'm grateful for in this life.
Wow. And how many school administrators and superintendents, assistant superintendents, district leaders are walking around feeling the same way, like they're carrying a huge weight on their shoulders and don't know what, how to address that or what that actually is, because there could be something underlying it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, oftentimes I think our school leaders feel like they have to have all the answers. That's not possible. And who do they have to go to? Who is their trusted confidant? Who is somebody that they can confide in when they're having a bad day that is going to keep that confidence? Mm-hmm. And that's so powerful. Having those people that you surround yourself with, we tell our kids that all the time, right?
Right.
The five people that you surround yourself is going to affect the trajectory of your life. But yet, are we practicing the same things that we know are important for our kids?
Right. And there's such a disconnect there sometimes. And sure. And then with the parents and the whole system, right?
Yeah.
And so I know you think a lot about this. What I appreciate about you too, Brandy, is that you have a very unique background in clinical social work. And I don't know if anyone knows that. So can you tell about that and then how that informs your role now as a superintendent?
Yeah. So, you know, because of the trauma that I experienced with the death of my brother, when I went to college, initially, I was going to be a nurse. And while I was in college, my mom was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And it's interesting how life works out sometimes, because I had my plans, I was set, I knew what I was going to do. And then my mom got cancer. And so I took time to take care of her. Away from school. And then when I went back to school, I knew at that point, no, it's not nursing for me. It just emphasized the importance of mindset. My mom lost hope when she had cancer. The doctors told her she had months to live and she lost hope. Mm-hmm. And they gave her 6 months. She lasted five. So when you think about mindset and the power of your thoughts, it definitely has a huge impact on your mental health. And so at that point in time, I majored in psychology and then I went to SLU to get a master's in social work, became a school social worker, wanted to give back to a school community because they had given so much to me when Brandon drowned. And fast forward, I went ahead and got a licensure in clinical social work. And for about a year, I hung a shingle and I provided private practice, you know, counseling for, I had some students, I had some families, I had some couples, and I enjoyed that work. But I know that my purpose and my calling is in the schools. That's where my heart kept taking me back to. And so with that clinical social work background, I knew that I needed to step into the school administration role. And so shortly after I stopped doing private practice, I became a principal in my hometown. the same school district where Brandon and Dustin and I attended when we were kids.
Wow.
And I was able to give back to that community for several years. And it was some of the best years that I've spent in education.
So what did you do differently as a principal with that background? How do you think that made you stand out and do something different to support people?
I think the focus for me has always been on relationships. Just sitting down like you and I are today and having that conversation, talking about not just what's going on at school with your curriculum and your test scores, but the relationships in your life. You know, this week I was fortunate to be able to do that with one of my teachers here. And you learn so much about people. And once they talk to you about what's going on in their life, their struggles, their successes, their fears, it bonds people. And we need that. We need that sense of belonging. We need to know that we care about each other, because education is harder now than it's ever been.
Right.
And if you don't have those people in your corner that you know they support you and they are cheering for you each and every day for your success, it's hard work. And a lot of people don't make it. I don't have a statistic on this, but I know that teachers and school leaders are leaving public education in large numbers now.
Yeah.
It really concerns me about the future for public education. And I think that there needs to be some pretty radical reform in order to make this sustainable for not just our kids, but also our teachers.
Right. I can't wait to talk with you more about that eventually. I think that's a whole nother episode too,
yeah,
because we have to talk about those very tangible shifts we have to make that are just going to transform culture. And so I want to dive into that with you for just one piece of that, because you uniquely give hope to people, again, with the background you have and the vision you have. So what is the one thing that you think needs to make that transformative shift across all of public education that would truly make a difference?
I think the thing that I see in my seat as a superintendent is because of the trauma that not only our kids, but our teachers and our school leaders are carrying every day, the anxiety and the depressive symptoms that they deal with every day, we need to look at collective well-being in our schools. So there are specific things as a superintendent that I see. Attendance rates for teachers and students is a major concern. People are missing school and work more now than ever. There's a reason for that. There's a root cause. We need to get at that, because when people consistently miss school and work, it adds to the workload for everybody.
Right.
Today, in a small high school of about 15 teachers that we have here in Mount Olive, we have two teachers out and one aide. That makes a huge difference, because we don't have subs. So we're pulling other people to cover those classes. And it has an impact on everybody. And when collectively we are not well, there's a domino effect.
Yeah.
And we have to begin to start looking at our habits. What are we doing to take care of ourselves and others in order to foster collective well-being? And it's simple things. It's simple things like, for instance, our dean of students at the high school today, he brought donuts to celebrate the fact that we had our SAT testing yesterday and it went well and everybody worked as a team and it was a success. I took happy notes to teachers and just said I was spreading joy. I said, I don't know how many notes, but it was about 10 minutes that I spent doing that. And we shared a lot of smiles. We shared some laughter. We brought some joy into our day. It's simple habits that you can encourage each other to do, like deep breathing when you're stressed, taking 5 minutes and practicing the pause, being present, being mindful. We make so many decisions every day in public education that we need to sometimes just stop, sit quietly, close our eyes, go to our happy place and enjoy it for just a few minutes. And it's a simple thing that takes moments, but can make such a difference in the way that we look at things, the way we look at each other. And I think it can be very powerful.
It even sounds powerful because I can put myself there, having the permission to do that. It sounds like giving the permission in the first place is big. And Brandy, you said there's a to try to find out the root cause of that chronic absenteeism. Do you think the root cause is that that collective well-being is being ignored? And then so then if we just insert little pieces of kind of that healing or just mindfulness, like you mentioned, is that the solution, just to insert that into our day, or is there something bigger we need to do?
I think that's the start, because I don't think people are ignoring collective well-being, but I think we don't have the same idea of what that means. We don't have maybe a common language or an intentional focus on what we need to do to improve that collective well-being. And then, you know, through the cycle of inquiry, we can evaluate that and see what's working, what's not working using data. But I think where we start is, giving people permission to take moments during the day, reminding them, supporting them, establishing those accountability partners to check in on them and say, okay, this is what we know we need to do. How are you doing on that? Not in a judgmental way, but in a supported accountability kind of manner. And it's going to be a process. Things like this are a process, not an event. And the thing that we need to do, though, is find out what we want to change and intentionally focus on the small things, because we know that the small things are the big things.
Oh, I love that. The small things are the big things. That is so powerful. And people who practice those small things understand that, don't they?
Absolutely. James Clear in Atomic Habits talks about that. You know, he talks about the fact that you can make small changes in your daily habits that make such a big impact.
Yes. Wow. So what is one thing that if you had all the funding in the world in your rural school district, what would you start implementing immediately that's missing?
That's a good question, Charlie. You know, a lot of times people point to the fact that time is something that they need of more of. We never have enough time. And people often talk about we never have enough money. But I think if you look at the number one complaint amongst educators, it's we don't have enough time. But when you drill down on that, if you did a time study and you looked at how you spent your time, is it that we don't have enough time, or is it that our priorities are not aligned? So I think the most impactful thing that we could do in schools that wouldn't take a lot of money is to create that system where everybody has an accountability partner and you give teachers specific amounts of time every single week to meet with that accountability partner and talk about what it is that they're doing to care for themselves and others, that wellness again. Give them the time, help them to learn to set those priorities, and then help them to learn to set healthy boundaries, because that is what we're lacking. I think in education, there's a lot of martyrs walking around.
Yes, you're right. Yes.
We're doing a book study right now, and it's called Shifting the Monkey by Todd Whitaker. And that is such a powerful book because it just reinforces the fact that we need to set boundaries for ourselves and others, not only to take care of ourselves, but also to build capacity. Look at all the people that we have in schools, but most of our schools, most of our educators are going to tell you the same people typically are on the committees. The same people are leading. We need to change that, and we need to spread that out and build capacity so that everybody has that ownership and has an opportunity to be inspired and empowered so that then they can pass that forward.
Well, there's a lot you're doing here, and this message is absolutely incredible. So you do this pretty often too. Can you tell people what you're working on now and what you're going to be doing to support people in the future? Because I know you're thinking about how you can extend your outreach too. So tell about the podcast. Let's start there.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing is I have a Lead with Hope podcast, and it's on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And so with the podcast, it's so much fun because I love having these conversations, but I ask people, how do they lead with hope? You know, what resonates most with them in regards to the H, habits, the O, the optimistic outlook, the P, passion, purpose, and perseverance, and E, excellence, because I think all of those ingredients are necessary in order for us to achieve success. But it doesn't necessarily just come because of that acronym of HOPE. It is an intentional process of self-reflection, self-awareness, and we have to build our level of self-efficacy so that we can serve ourselves and others. Service to others is so important to me. And I think that in education, we have a lot of selfless people. But with that, it goes back to what I said before. We also have to learn how to take care of ourselves, to set boundaries, to, you know, not consistently deplete our cup. And in order to be able to serve others, we can't have an empty cup, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's another project that my daughter and I, which is so fun to work with my daughter. She and I are doing Monday videos, and it's just a little dose of inspiration. It's called A Cup of Hope. Because you can't pour from an empty cup, right? And we try to send out an inspirational Monday message to, you know, let people know that there is hope, and there's always something positive to look for in this life. And so we're doing that. I'm working with Road to Awesome, and my book will hopefully be published in December of 24. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And then in addition to that, I am doing some speaking engagements. So I've got a couple on the calendar and looking to get more scheduled.
That is fantastic. And if people don't, like, if they haven't heard you speak yet, Brandy, they just need to go to your podcast. They need to go to that Cup of Hope as well. That's really neat. I love that. Mm-hmm. So tell people where they can find you so they can see what your message is like and how your delivery is, because I know they'll want to scoop you right up.
Sure. They can go to my website. That's kind of an all one-stop shop, and it's leadwithhope.net. So I would just encourage them to go to my website and check out my content, and they can reach out to me there. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, Lead with Hope. And it's at Twitter, it's at JBMR Kelly.
Great. And that's, of course, all on the show notes, but you're right. If they just go to your website, leadwithhope.net, you all, .net, go there. Everything is there. And reach out to Kelly, or sorry, reach out to Dr. Kelly, because you have such like a great vision, and everybody needs to know what your background is so that they know what you're bringing into your message of hope for people who have experienced trauma, anxiety, and depression that is just plaguing our school system. So if you have one message to share before we leave, what would that be?
I love quotes. Quotes speak to me. And I would say that Maya Angelou, she has a quote that speaks to me, and it is, love recognizes no barriers. It jumps hurdles, leaps fences, penetrates walls to arrive at its destination full of hope. So the message there is hold on to that hope, because tomorrow is coming, and together we can create a hopeful future.
I love it. Thank you so very much for being here. I appreciate it. And I know our listeners will too.
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate you having me.